extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, Chuck D, and the Hamptons' own David Goss. Vacation, lean back, have at it. He's at the beach, everybody.
Life is right beach. Now. Not these are the words I live by. I'm basically Tommy Bahama right now.
That is the most, before we get to what is a packed show, because we have Wednesday night, Tuesday night even, Daryl DK in Orlando City laid it on, the Earthquakes, and then an entire weekend of action, plus a conversation with Robbie Rogers and Colin Martin. Big news this week in sports, in society, in the world. Carl Nassib coming out, the fifth out and active male professional athlete team sports in North America's major leagues. He's the fifth. We had this conversation last week. We talked all about why it is that more have not come out. Well, Robbie and Colin helped us understand that, Charlie and I, but also we saw this big news coming. So congratulations to Carl Nassib. You'll want to stick around for this conversation, part of our Soccer for All Speakers series with MLS Works. It's really great. But first, that piece of artwork that said beach on it and had an umbrella and a beach chair, that's iconic. That's what every beach house needs, Dave.
Yeah, for sure.
Tell me about your week. What are you doing? What's it like?
My girlfriend's family is visiting me in New York for the beach. And then I'm going to MLS next right after this.
Nice.
So you've got a ton of soccer coming up for anyone who wants to cue it in on young players.
They're visiting you. Your girlfriend's family is visiting you.
Yep. My family's home. My family's home. So yeah, it's a whole new experience for me and I'm enjoying it quite a lot.
All right. Any advice for Dave? Hit us in the mailbag. Let's get after it. Let's just get it started.
You don't want to say too much.
But yeah. It's great here. I love everyone. I wish we did this every summer.
Best Our time producer, ever.
Anders, reminder of the day. Between the midweek action and previewing the weekend, we may not get to talk much about your team. Looking at you, we're sorry. I'm not sorry. Yes, that also means we hate your team specifically. No, that doesn't mean that. But let's get right into it. Big midweek winners. My fun zone. The narrative fun zone. Tuesday night, Orlando, 5-0 on Mateus Almeida. We've seen this Mateus Almeida face before. We've seen this body language before on the sideline. This has happened before, but it was Daryl's first start. He got two goals. Benji Michel looked great. Orlando looked great. I jumped on Poppy's conference call this week. He's still trying to tamp it all down, be like, we're all right. It's okay. Inter Miami's a good team. By the way, they play Inter Miami on Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern on FS1. Charlie, Daryl DK, the hype train, we're all riding on it. Clickety-clack, clickety-clack.
Benji Michel has his hat so that he could ride on it.
Exactly.
He wore the full cowboy hat in his goal celebration, which was class.
This is awesome. And this is what I think we should all be doing and what Daryl is clearly doing is just living in the moment and making the absolute most out of it. I didn't think we'd see him in MLS again. I honestly didn't think that. This is a treat.
I honestly thought we'd see him back in MLS because of that price tag, right? He's scoring. He's producing. It was in the championship. I never thought that Barnsley would be able to afford him. And also, I think from his standpoint, he wants to go to a club that's going to be competing in a top division where he's going to be guaranteed, opportunity. And that's all you can ask. So he comes back to Orlando City and picks up right where he left off. The man is a beast. He's scoring goals. He's holding up the ball. You can tell everyone enjoys him in the 11. He's a player that brings people together. I hope he makes a move this summer. I really do. I hope he finds the right situation. And I think that's really important that he doesn't leave just to leave. He goes to the right club where he can continue his development. Right now, I think he's in a perfect spot. So if he stays with Orlando and finishes the season, obviously it's going to be great for Orlando, but it's going to be great for Daryl DK because it's that continuation of his development playing in that system. Oscar Pereira, one of the most experienced coaches in Major League Soccer, are just going to continue to try and push him to the next level. I love that. And this is a fun team. I mean, they're definitely a different team when he's in the lineup.
It's weird to watch it, right? Because I think I put Orlando in my top tier coming into the season. Center forward's their biggest question mark. So Darryl's back. Everything's fixed, right? But Charlie, and I think everyone thinks he's gone in this summer. So it's hard to watch them play and say, oh, they beat TFC 3-2 this weekend, and now they beat San Jose 5-0. Well, this is an MLS Cup team, because you have to in some way mentally couch it at some point with Darryl. And I don't think that it's out of question without him. Obviously, he makes them better. And if they sell him, maybe they're able to use that money this season to bring someone in. But it is odd to watch it go down and sort of remind yourself. And to what we talked about when he was in the championship, again, two goals, two different ways. That's what's made him so effective. He does some things great, but right now he's doing everything well. And that's what's awesome about his game.
Yeah, the ball in behind, rounds the keeper, and then the set piece where he just...
The rounds the keeper was not a simple finish.
No, it wasn't.
It's a tight window, and he hits a laser so that a defender can't block it, and then he gets the set piece header and dunks it on someone. And that was the one where you saw Matias Almeida look like...
I mean, it was over at that point. It's right after the second half starts. He's just like, yep, we're in for another one here.
Yeah.
I talked to Poppy, and I asked him, how do you manage this? Because you said it, Dave. This is difficult, and it's difficult for a lot of reasons. Could he go to the Gold Cup and be gone for that? He absolutely could, because he appears to be and probably should be, based upon form and everything else, and the U.S. national team's number 9 depth chart, in the running to be starting World Cup qualifier games. And if he's going to be doing that, he needs to be in form. He needs to be playing. So he has to make a decision based on that side of things as well. I mean, Oscar said, look, I talk to Greg all the time. We're good. We're friends. We know each other well. He wouldn't give away whether he's going to go to the Gold Cup or not. But that's certainly a possibility. The flip side with the sale is Orlando City's going through changes as well on the ownership side. And that complicates things for them as well. They're finally good. They're thinking, oh, my God, we might be able to go win something.
And well, then you look without, at...
Can well, they without Gerald Dike?
You look at a move now just north of you, right, that happened a few hours ago that we're going to talk about. Is that a window for you? Is it a sale with a loan back for the rest of this season? Does that fit this ownership group, this player, as well as welcome? Like... Is that the clean fit for this whole cycle, which is playing at his peak in September with Orlando, winning for that ownership group, as well as having a sale going forward that he's excited about?
Did we? Do you want to give the quote, Dave? I saw you tweeting about it. The Darryl popped off after this from the championship, basically saying, here it is. Yeah, quote, after playing across both leagues, you just see how good MLS is. A lot of people kind of downplay the quality of the league. I think that being able to see both leagues, you can see how good the players are. You can see how strong the league is. Now, is that self-serving a little bit for us, noted MLS supporters and you could argue homers? Certainly. No, Darryl only speaks the truth, man.
Yeah, Darryl knows his fan base. He knows his job. He knows what he's doing. Him and Leon Flock said the same thing recently, right? He was like, you step on a field with Carlos Heel, it's a different level than what I've ever played at before, and it's a good league. So it's been fun to watch him come back and do his thing, though.
Inter-Miami-Orlando, there's some rivalry stuff to this. AP Meastern, Friday, FS1, Fox Deportes, Viernes de Football. Oscar was asked repeatedly about Miami and basically how they're in a tailspin, how they're stuck in the mud. And he was like, oh, no, you know, he did the Oscar thing. He was like, oh, all of our rivals are very, you know, it will be a different game. It will be a difficult game. But this is a statement game, I think, for Orlando. Like, what if they drop a 5-0 on Phil Neville and the boys?
It's a massive game.
It's possible.
It's a massive game because it's one of two ways. If Orlando wins it, this is one of the best weeks in their franchise's history, right? They've only been to the playoffs once. They've been to an Open Cup semifinal once. To put together three wins like this, including a 5-0, and then beating Inter Miami at the end, would be one of the best weeks in this club's history. On the flip side, if Inter Miami can gut a win out here, it has the potential to change their season and change their internal perception and the external perception. So this is one of the bigger games you'll have in the middle of June in MLS.
Yeah, Miami's like on that knife edge, where if they fall off one way, it almost feels like even 10 games in that the season is just sort of kaput, that there's not going to be any belief that seems like, I mean, I know, look, I said on the last show, when Phil Neville's coming out and praising effort and commitment after a game that you lose and don't look good in, after you've lost twice to DC United, that's like, that's the old vote of confidence. You know what I mean? Like, why are you having to talk about that, Phil? Well, it's because it's not really there. We shall see. No Shawcross, no Gregory. Both had their suspension appeals denied, and I think that makes sense as well. You mentioned Caden Clark, though. I hear the birds chirping in the background somewhere. That's got to be the same for Caden Clark this morning. The news is official. He's headed to RB Leipzig after the end of the MLS season. We've seen a couple transfers like this now go down where you're waiting until winter. I mean, didn't Tyler Adams go down this way?
Yep.
Yeah. Yes. And then you have Britton Aronson. Seems to be the way that both landed, that this is a decent way for both MLS teams to get what they want, but also the purchasing team to get what they want. What do you think about this, Charlie? As someone who's made a European transfer, Caden Clark going to RB Leipzig, it's not like this is a surprise. We knew this was coming, but now that it's here, what say you?
I think it's a fantastic move for Caden Clark. He's a player that is a step ahead, right? I think he's tactically sound. I think he's still trying to find his feet within the Red Bulls organization on the pitch, but also within the league, because we've seen him. He's capable of scoring some incredible goals. But what can you do in between those goals? And he is a creative player. He's always looking to move, to play forward, which he fits this Red Bull system extremely well because of that. I think the intention is to always play forward, to always connect and look to get in behind. But I think with that being said, there's still a lot of room for development. I think it's great that he's going to get to finish the season in New York. And then he'll go to Leipzig midway through the year. Jesse Marsh is there. He's probably going to play that half of that season with the reserves, train with the first team. So you're still getting minutes with the reserve side. And then for that next summer, now every opportunity to gain minutes with the first team. And I think it's a good transition into the European life, the way of things. It's a rigorous schedule. The training, the demands on the field, off the field. So I think it's a perfect situation for Caden Clark to walk into.
Red Bulls 2 expert David Goss, you've seen this development further back and more.
Whoa.
Yeah, what's
look
up?
At him. He's looking like a proud father.
Yeah, a little proud papa. You don't want you know what? When you're in the stands and you see your kid score a goal and you don't want to be like jumping up and down, but you like look around and smile and you're like, yeah, that's my kid. Everybody knows. That's my kid. That's my boy.
Listen, there are MLS teams who have developed less national team players than New York Red Bulls, too. So, just throwing it out there.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. What have you seen from him? What have you seen from him sort of the early Red Bulls 2 days? And they weren't that long.
No.
Into the Red Bulls and now where he stands.
Yeah, I think the first thing is there's those few players that you talk about with coaches, you talk about with players, and they're clearly different. Tyler was the first one. John Tolkien, I think, is on that list as well from everything that people that work around him talk about. And Caden Clark's on that. Just his willingness to work, his understanding of how he can get better, how the professional game works. For a lot of people that don't know, I think his dad runs a gym in Minnesota and his family's, you know, in the health and fitness world. Mm-hmm. So they've been working with him with these concepts for a really long time. And then the willingness to take a role. So he got to Red Bulls too. He wasn't in the Red Bull system. So he had never played in an MLS system before. And he immediately took the number 10 as a teenager for that team in USL. And it was a tough year, but he was the guy that everything was built around and then was ready to scale up. And that's one of those things. We talk about this a lot, Charlie, obviously you've experienced it, but when I watch a player understand how to scale, whatever that scale is, right? When you watch a player move from USL to MLS, from MLS, maybe one team to a better MLS team, to be able to adapt to CCL in their first few games.
Into the national team, maybe.
Yeah, that shows me a player who, I'm not saying they're the best player in the world, and I'm saying he's a Bundesliga star, but you know he understands how to play within his game to get settled, to get that experience, and then to move up the ladder over the course of his career. I still don't know what his best position is, and that's not a knock on him. Like, I think he does so much well that he could play a little deeper and control the game a little more, or he could play higher and be more of a goal scorer more consistently, as we've seen him do for New York Red Bulls and MLS. There's a ton of promise here, and it's exciting, I think, especially for national team, because you're talking about all these roles. Where does Weston fit? Where does Musa fit? Where does Reyna fit? And I think he, along with Brendan Aronson, are guys, Musa as well, who can play three or four of these roles at the top level if he gets there. And that just gives more options for the national team going forward.
So congratulations to Caden Clark. Again, we all knew, like everybody knew. This has been sort of floating around for more than a year at this point. Now it's just official. You actually have the, you know, signing on the dotted line and the press release that came out. So this is the same concept, I think, with Daryl Dike. And it's the way I think we're all going to have to start experiencing this league more and more, which is to live, watch, experience in the moment. How long will we get to see Daryl Dike with Orlando City? We don't know. It might be pretty short. How long will we get to see Caden Clark with the New York Red Bulls? Well, we do know that. It's the rest of the year. So that's your opportunity to tune in and see the kid play in our stadiums against our teams before he takes that next step. And then we can all watch him from afar and celebrate that as well. I love that this league is coming along this path and there's more and more players. We just got done talking about Gianluca Busio in the same way on the last show. And I wonder if these sort of transfers with the deal done in the summer and the move done in the winter are going to start becoming more of the norm to help MLS sort of get into the market, but also not sacrifice seasons.
So can I just say this again for the 800th time on this show? It's not a golden generation. Every time someone asks, now you're talking about a 5-year age group, right? Because Weston and Christian, I think, are about 23.
Yeah.
Is that right? Does someone feel close there? Okay. Yep. So and you're looking at Caden, who's 18. And so you're talking about a 5-year age gap right now of players who are now going to Champions League teams. This is the second best team in Germany. Whether he's coming from Red Bull to Leipzig, this is the second best team in Germany. This is a Champions League semifinalist from a year ago. This is unprecedented in MLS history, except for the last 3 years. And so this is not a golden generation. And again, I don't mean to tout the things, but MLS Next coming up next week, all these guys have played in that tournament before. Obviously, new name, new setup. But this is not a mistake. And we have not perfected youth development in this country on any level. And I personally believe we never will, just because of the size and scope, Canada and the U.S. And I think Doyle and me talked about it on the show last week. But this is what's going right. And I think it's going to continue to go right going forward. Sean McCafferty, who runs the Red Bull Academy now, was at the Barcelona Arizona Academy, where he had a lot of these players that you're now seeing pop through at different MLS sides and move on to Europe.
Big winners midweek here. Let's keep it rolling here. Oh, my God. FC Cincinnati. Let's go. The bottom of the table derby. Cincy Fire. We're going to get to the Fire in the mailbags. We had a lot of questions about them, but, hey, they threw a shutout. They won 1-0. They celebrated it as they should. Congratulations, FC Cincinnati. You got to take all the positive moments you can, bundle them up, and just try to build on them. That's a road win. That's a road win at Soldier Field against the Fire. Congratulations to you. Now you got to go to Explorer Stadium and play Toronto FC, which is strange, but that's another opportunity, Cincinnati. So you won midweek. See if you can win on the weekend. Minnesota United, those two new signings, we've been asking about them for a while. When are they going to be there, and how good are they going to be? Franco Fragapane, Adrian Hunu, both get goals in a 2-0 win for Minnesota United. It's starting to look a little bit better. And the goal from Hunu was really, excuse me, from Fragapane, but also Hunu, was really nice. Like, Austin can't score, but you're going to take a 2-0 win all day.
And they had off last weekend. So you host midweek to a team who just played a home game on Saturday, a huge emotional moment. That was a must win for Minnesota, but they're starting to rack up these points. And you see them and LAFC start to try and pull themselves back into the playoff spots.
Speaking of LAFC, Chuck, did you catch Carlos Vela last night?
I did.
It's hard to.
He was smiling.
And he looked.
And he was scoring.
Engaged.
And he was assisting.
Yes.
And knock on wood, maybe Kraklitos is back. How does this change not just LAFC, but I think it changes the entirety of the MLS season in the Western Conference if he is, even if it's not 100%, at 90%. And he looked like it against FC Dallas, though, again, a lot of folks have looked like it against FC Dallas.
Well, we all know it's not how you start. It's how you finish. And I think with this LAFC team, we know what they look like when they're at their best, when everyone's fit and healthy. And it's all, I think, all the success hinges on Carlos Vela. Everything revolves around him within that team, because he has the ability to draw two or three defenders to him to create more space for others. He has the ability to beat two or three defenders on the dribble and score from all over the pitch. So I think when you have Carlos Vela in your lineup and he's healthy and he's happy, it spreads throughout the group and you can see it. The connections, the combinations, the one touch, two touch, everything moves a little bit more crisp into the attacking third. I've seen that. And we're just getting started. If they can go on a run to pick up those points midsummer and then come early fall, now everyone's fit, in form, and now you have a belief that this is the year for MLS Cup based on Carlos Vela and his success, this team really has a shot and they can disrupt a lot of things in this Western Conference.
Sporting KC is the destination for LAFC this weekend. 5:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN on Saturday. It's the first game on Saturday. I'm currently begging, borrowing, and stealing, trying to get my way into that stadium with Cameron. So if I manage to secure that and I see you there, I say what's up. Say what's up.
No, right? No, don't. Turn to Weeby and say,
who are you?
Dad, I love this.
Dad, this is my favorite league.
Cameron, 20 minutes in, is going to be like, how many brothers do I have?
Yeah, and he's also like, why are we not playing on the playground right now?
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Guys are just running around.
Maybe Nebraska furniture.
Exactly. Sporting Kansas City, 3-1 winners against Colorado. Rapids didn't really seem engaged in this game. Daniel Shalvey had 2 goals. We had an email from Andrew in KC. That's not me. If Daniel Shalvey is going to keep filling the box score, we got to come with a better nickname than DS20. Hope the DK Hive has room for the Bin Bear coming back from Trash Player of the Year.
Oh, no.
DS20 is no good. Not going to lie. DS20 is no good for Daniel Shalvey. But
can
I
we just
happy.
Call him The Bachelor?
Yeah, that is a good one.
Wasn't
yeah,
he
I
on
like
The
that
Bachelor?
One. No, it was like a...
It was on a different show?
More of a like a local access Sporting KC run Bachelor, but there were roses involved. It was on the call up, but I think it was something Sporting KC did. Anyway, he's back. He doesn't want to hear about 2020. He literally said in his post game, Daniel Shalvey, after scoring 2 goals, stop talking about 2020. I don't want to hear about 2020. And I could not agree more. I do not need to understand, hear about, or re-experience that year in any way. So congratulations to him. Big game in the Western Conference on Saturday.
This game we talked about, Ely's a good stopgap. Now it's been 5 or 6 in a row with him at center back. Fontas looks fairly comfortable as well. This is the test, right? This is Vela coming at you, Rossi breaking through the lines, the ability of Latif or Atuesta to start to pull pieces apart. This is the big test to see if this KC backline legitimately can push them to a title race or whatever it's going to be. And the last piece of the Rapids game that was awesome to see was Felipe Hernandez get a goal.
Yeah.
Again, academy product. I don't think this is a national team guy. I think this is a really good MLS player. And this is part of what I think KC has 13 homegrowns in their first team right now. This is part of what you're trying to develop is good, solid players that you know can get the job done. And he's one of them.
But congratulations.
I might add this as well. For a team like LAFC, like you said, Rossi, Vela, hit in form. This summer transfer market could be interesting for an LAFC if they can go out and get a target striker, a number 9 who's going to get in behind, create more space, also be a goal scorer, another threat. Because the false 9, you know how I feel about the false 9. I don't want to see it. I don't want to give me a real striker up there, one who can stretch the back line, hold up the ball, beat people on the dribble, a dynamic striker. Give me that. And if LAFC can go out and get one, that's going to be the difference maker. That is going to be the difference maker.
We'll see what happens. Because
Charlie offended, but I think Danny Musovski and Cal Jennings are offended because they don't think they're false nines. They just aren't as good.
Hey, Cal Jennings got his first start. Congratulations to him. I did love him celebrating with Carlos Vela. He's like, on that first goal, he's like, I'm here with Carlos. Yeah. We're celebrating a goal. It's amazing. Congratulations to Cal Jennings. Sporting KC LFC, first game on Saturday on ESPN. Congratulations to Nashville. They've been telling us, the supporters on Twitter, you don't have to talk about us. It's all good. Don't talk about us. Don't worry about us right now. But then they beat Toronto FC. Late goal from Hackinson. Nice goal as well. Not a nice goal if you're a Toronto FC fan. And here they are. So congratulations to them. They're big midweek winners. Sounders, again, midweek winners, not playing their best. Again, we talked about this is Shield stuff. You know, like a lucky – it was a lucky PK. Like a lucky PK at the end to win, but the best part about it is here comes David Ochoa to do a little chatting, and here comes Raul Ruiz Diaz for the Panenka.
Wait, are we really skipping over Nashville and Toronto?
Do we not have to? Dig in.
We have to address it. Toronto. What is going on? What is going on? Because you look at this roster. How are they not producing? How are they not getting results? Those excuses are out the window of a new coach. Chris Armas was brought in to move this club forward. If anything, they're walking 10 steps backward. Am I wrong? How are we not talking about
you're
Toronto?
You're right. I'm just looking at the standings as you say this. Toronto sitting down in 13th. Cincinnati, with one fewer game played, has more points. Cincinnati. This is the Toronto team that was second in the Supporters Shield yesterday. That were the Supporters Shield favorites. Probably should have won the thing. Did they win the thing?
No.
No, Philly won it. What am I talking about?
God.
Yeah, they fell. They fell off.
But that gives you an idea of where they were.
What'd you just say, Weeby? What'd you just say at the end of that? You said Pozuelo got hurt and they fell off. One game from Pozuelo. Came out of this one injured. Jonathan Osorio's play, I think he started twice. He's played more for Canada this year in minutes than he has played for TFC. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about a team that's not fully fit, hasn't even been in the country they live in the entire year, and had to deal with CCL to start the year. So I'm not
same
saying
with Montreal. Same with Montreal. I'm going to throw that out there. They lose their
Montreal
coach.
Didn't have CCL.
Oh, they lose their coach. They're not a good. They're not nowhere near as good as a team as Toronto FC, and they're doing just fine. Actually, they've exceeded everyone's expectations. You look at Toronto. They still have. You look at their starting 11. You can go down the roster. They have what it takes to get results, to be top among the top teams in the East. Yes, they are good enough, and they're nowhere. They're not performing anywhere near. And should dare I say, Jozy Altidore, do something about that situation. That's a prized asset. Whether you move on from him or you get him back into the team, something has to happen. Obviously, that's taken away from the culture within the club, the feel within the club. Something needs to happen. There are so many question marks revolving. You know, I think when you look at Toronto FC, Chris Armas, there was already, I think, a good amount of blowback with the hire. Is he the right guy? He has no record of success as a head coach. Zero.
Not zero, but I understand the point you're making.
Okay.
And I understand why Toronto fans felt the way that they did, but continue. Right.
But you come in to a team that should be competing for an MLS Cup. They're below Cincinnati.
So can I just say, I don't know if I'm asking a question or making a point here. So I'm just going to say a thing and you guys can react to everyone. What you're saying is true, is the question I'm asking, which is, should they have signed Omar? Should they have gone in and kept Michael? Should they have gone and gotten Kamar Lawrence? Like, at some point, a team needs to reset, unless you are unbelievable. And in MLS, that's almost impossible because of a salary cap. Mm-hmm. And so I watch this team play, and I'm thinking, yeah, Omar can't keep up with this system and is struggling. And Mavinga hasn't even been that great along this back line. They don't have the right pieces. At some point, the win now moves catch up to you. And so you say they should because of the names on the roster, not because of where they perform in 2021 as individuals. And that's, I think, one of the issues. And I don't know if Pasquale's
healthy. I get what you're saying.
This is true.
I get what you're saying. But what Charlie's saying, which I agree with, which is the individuals have enough talent and ability. And they showed it to you last year. It wasn't like it was 3 years ago. You've had a bunch of tough years and then you fell off. They showed it to you last year to be better than this. And the collective is not better. The collective isn't. And that's what has to be so frustrating. I mean, Soteldo hasn't been to the team like enough. I get that. Pozuelo's been out. Yes, he's the MVP. All this. But up and down. Charlie's right. They had enough. Chris Mavinga tweeted last night after this game. Let me just get his tweet in, because this is also important too, because they aren't living in their own beds. They're still in 2020. We talk about we want to leave 2020 behind. They are still living in it. What we are going through is very difficult, Mavinga tweeted, living in the hotel, far from our families, and the results that don't come. Please, TFC fans, we need your support even more than yesterday.
There are no teams in MLS that would consistently win without a player of Pozuelo's quality. And I understand Anders about to talk to me about Seattle, and that's great. But then you take Soteldo out consistently, and you're talking about the two highest priced players on a roster. Jozy is now unavailable, which is self-inflicted from the club. That is a necessity. So I'm not going to, give them credit off of that. I just think there are 80 things happening around this team, and it's not as straightforward as it's just not good enough.
Well, I'm telling you right now,
it's just not good enough.
We can keep going in circles because you have Ayo Akinola. We saw what he did last year, right? This is a player. Yeah, he's battled injury, but you would expect him to now. That's his baseline last year, platform. You want to push him to the next level, get him firing on all cylinders.
But he didn't even have a preseason.
Listen, geez, give me my air.
Stump. Gosh. Let's go. Stump.
Okay. Richie Larea. Is he a right wing? Is he a right winger? Is he a right winger?
I don't know.
Are you setting him up for success? Are you setting up the team for success if he's playing in a right attacking position when we've seen how good he is as a right back, even a left back in this league? You have Osorio, you have Pozuelo, you have Michael Bradley, you have Marky Delgado. Akinola up top. Is that not enough to get results?
It is.
And you have Quentin, you have, and it took a while, but you brought Quentin Westberg back into the goal because he is
made
the best
one keeper. Of the worst mistakes I've ever seen against Orlando.
He's the best keeper for this group though. So my thing for Toronto FC, and the thing is, when I see such a talented group, I get frustrated because I'm like, man, it's so simple. You play beautiful soccer. You have the talent. Why is it not working? Well, you guys, I don't think you need to be a brain surgeon to know that things need to change drastically.
For all the brain scientists out there, no, I'm just messing around. Here's the point. Does DC United have a player like Pozuelo? No, they don't. They have more points. Does Orlando, they've dealt with injuries. DK's been gone. Pereira's been dealing with an injury all year. They've had suspensions to their best players. They're second in the East. Does Nashville have a player like Pozuelo?
Absolutely.
No, they've been disappointing, but they still are getting 1.5 points per game. Montreal is a great example. You know, you go down this list, all these teams above them. I know that you lose Pozuelo and it hurts, but yeah.
Toronto, I think that's a different conversation, but fine.
Okay.
All right. But one win, six losses, two draws.
I think losing a player on your roster is different than not having a player of that quality. Nashville, Montreal, DC, they've built different rosters than what TFC did. So I don't think not having a player of Pozuelo's quality is the same as losing the key piece of what you built everything around.
That's fair. I'm
but
just
let's
saying,
move it, on I'm to some
individual
of these
versus collective. Let's hit, you know, Sounders, because Anders is probably in the chat saying, actually, we were good against RSL.
But
it was 1-1, man. It was 1-1. When I say shield teams, like performance versus results, like you got it though. And I said it, David Ochoa chats. Love it from David Ochoa. Love that he inspired Raul Ruiz Diaz to Panenka. What does it take when you step to the spot, Charlie, to decide to Panenka? Like, what is going through your head?
Charlie, how do you never choose, done it.
How do you choose violence in that moment?
Against the Galaxy. You know, when you step up to the spot, you're thinking, okay, he's going to move. I know he's going to move. It's that usually late in the game, they're like, I know he's going to bang it to a corner. I'm going to have to get this incredible jump off. And typically, the keeper is always going to move. So you have to have that confidence that I'm going to sell it, like I'm going to just smash it like Rui Diaz did and just lift it. And when you see the keeper leaning and going in that direction as you chip it, it's like the sweetest feeling because it's like, I outsmarted you. And that's what really hurts the keeper because it's like, how dare you? There's no way he's going to try something like that. And it's that mental game that comes with it. And when Rui Diaz hit it and it was such a sweet strike, the way he was able to just lift it down the middle, you could see that smile on his face, like, I got it. So I love when a striker can step up to any player, step up to the spot and have the courage to go down the middle. Of course, the striker love it. And I love Rui Diaz because I don't think he even gets the credit he deserves in this league. As well as he's done, and he's phenomenal, I still don't think people give him enough credit.
He hasn't had
that
like
dynamic. He
hasn't had an MVP season, but he might be on his way to it. Mm-hmm. It's him. It's Carlos Heel. By the way, the revs were very delicious going forward on Wednesday night as well.
On my note on Rui Diaz, because before that, he basically missed an open goal. Ochoa comes out. He beats Ochoa. There's a defender in front of him, I think in Silva. But come on, you're Rui Diaz with no goalkeeper in the box. That's an open goal. And he slows himself up and lets, I guess it was Beisler catch him or Glad. And I wrote in my note, Rui Diaz missed an open goal. What's going on with the world? So he came back in Panenka for the win.
Yeah.
So he did well. But
there you go, right? No.
Chicharito got a goal midweek as well. Mm-hmm. Clean one up. And then Efra Alvarez broke the Vancouver Whitecaps' hearts in stoppage time. That left foot is sweet.
And Bikel scored in the 92nd, I think, to tie it 1-1. Okay, Vancouver gets a little bit of life, finally can feel good about something.
Poor Vancouver, man.
They go back down the other way, and Efra hits one of the goals.
Efra hit him with the sight!
And look, we get a nice matchup on Saturday. San Jose, LA Galaxy, 10 p.m. Eastern, Unimas Tudian English on Twitter. That's a second of a Unimas Tudian Twitter doubleheader. RSL Houston is the other one. Houston, big news. Did they sign a DP? Is that what happened? What's going on here? They got new ownership. Seems like they're going to be really ambitious, want to be really ambitious. One of the first things they did was re-sign Tim Parker, who's been a great signing for them, and then go out and get a Zimbabwean center back from Turkey. He's a DP. I've seen various reports.
Guaranteed he's on the team. So the question mark is his roster status, but it sounds like the Houston Chronicle's reporting that he is a designated player. He wasn't going to be when they first started looking at him a few months ago. And since then, he was just lights out to close out the Turkish League. I think he was best 11 three of the last 5 weeks of the season. It seems like the numbers moved up, and it's exciting to see the new ownership group as they were coming in say, let's get it done. I don't know that this is an ownership group that's going to spend with the LAFCs and the Atlantas, but what I love about this is you've got a front line that works hard. You've got a coach who has an idea that if I press and we play cohesive, we can be successful. And you are identifying the signings that you need. It doesn't mean he's the best player in MLS. He is a center back who can recover over the top when you play with a high line, who's comfortable with the ball to help you build out of the back alongside Tim Parker. He's 25 years old. He's a full international. This was what you needed. You didn't need to go out and sign Sergio Aguero. You needed a player who fits you. And then, just from my understanding of the way the deal worked, it's probably a low-end DP.
Yeah.
So if in a year or two, your ownership group comes in and says, oh, we're actually two pieces away, you can work those contracts around to go out and get the next Sergio Aguero, Antoine Griezmann, whoever's coming. But I love this type of move for this team, and this is the biggest hole in the team. So now you've got a left center back locked in alongside Tim Parker for 3 to 4 years. Look at what Columbus did with Jonathan Mensah and the way it worked out for them. This makes a ton of sense.
Preach, guys. You
teenage Hadibi.
I got you,
teenage Hadibi, welcome. Welcome to Houston. Man, now they could have used him midweek because they went up 2-0 against the Timbers, and then they drew 2-2, so that wasn't great for them.
This is one of those things with pressing teams, right? Can you put your foot on the ball and control the game? They went up 2-0, and they pushed for the third, but at no point held the two goals. And obviously, J-Bo comes in with the tower header in stoppage time. He's back, baby. J-Bo for national team. J-Bo for Gold Cup.
Got to find my Bobasi jersey. Man. It's sitting around here somewhere. Pulled on the old Talisman Adidas kit for the day. That has been midweek. Weekend. Check it out, MLSsoccer.com, all the coverage. We've got it for you there, and we'll be back on Monday to break it all down as well. Let's get to something a little bit more important. We say this all the time, and thank you for sticking with us as we cover both soccer but also life within the game. Before we get to this conversation with Robbie and Colin, I just want to say how thankful I am that Extra Time is part of the Speaker for All series. It's a season-long program by MLS Works in partnership with the league's employee resource groups to amplify underrepresented voices. If you missed our interview with Sean Davis about his Asian heritage and Stop AAPI Hate Movement, please go back in the feed, check that out, give it a listen. It's really powerful. Last week, we also spoke to, and I'm sure you heard it, U.S. Men's National Team player and former Union homegrown Mark McKenzie about Juneteenth and the ongoing job we all have to eliminate racism in our game and our communities. Check that out. Also, go check out MLS's support of Athlete Allies Playing for Pride fundraising campaign. Do you remember a couple years ago, Dave, we talked to Austin Deleuze? I think in 2019, it's his organization, and it's all about making sports inclusive for the LGBTQ plus community and why that's an important mission. So you can donate to that campaign. The link's at MLSsoccer.com on the homepage. So for every goal, save, or game played throughout June, Pride Month, proceeds benefit Athlete Allies education, policy, and advocacy work, and also the Black Women's Player Collective. So it's an awesome cause. One last note before we get to Colin and Robbie. We recorded this, Charlie and I did, last week before the Raiders' Carl Nassib came out publicly. He's the first active and out NFL player and the fifth ever in North American major pro sports leagues, male. You'll hear me say in this interview there have been four such athletes of all time. I'm happy to say that it is now five. And without further ado, let's get to it. Robbie Rogers and Colin Martin. First of all, welcome and thank you guys for being a part of MLS Works' Soccer for All speaker series. I think I can speak for Charlie when I say we're proud to be here today to have this conversation. More importantly, to listen to what you both have to say. Robbie, Colin, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks. It's a pleasure.
So I want to start with something in the news over the last year, and I thought it was one of the more incredible weeks in professional sports history that I've ever seen. Last year, Colin, your San Diego Loyal forfeited back-to-back matches in the heat of a playoff race, one after a player was revealed to have been racially abused, and then in the final game of the season, against one of the league's top teams, you're competing with the Loyal just walked off the field in protest after a Phoenix Rising player directed a homophobic slur at you, Colin. It was a game San Diego was leading 3-1. It was a result you needed to have any chance of keeping your trophy dreams alive. In my mind, it was unprecedented. I don't remember anything like it. It was principled. It was sacrifice. I'm curious from both your perspectives. Colin, from you living it, and Robbie, you on the outside looking in, how did you experience that moment and everything that's followed? And Colin, I think we can start with you. Like, as you reflect now, Does it seem incredible? Does it seem just like what should have happened? I mean, in some ways, both of those are so true.
Yeah, I think first off, let me start with that. I think we wouldn't have walked off the field if what happened the week before with my teammate Elijah, him being called the N-word, if that didn't happen. Because of that, like that week following, we just like as a team, we really came together and we're just basically like, hey, in the future, if this happens, we need to do something. First of all, we need to acknowledge it. So Elijah or teammates that heard the word, like we need to know about it so that we can like back our teammates up. But then we also need to do something about it. So I think that whole week leading up to the Phoenix game, we wore shirts before the game. Before the game, we came together as a team to acknowledge what happened. At halftime, we were going to do something with Phoenix where we were going to stand together and acknowledge what was said. And so I think all that leading up kind of led to the team being on the same page for when basically what happened to me. I mean, I had a slur used against me, and all I did was tell the ref what happened, and he didn't quite know what to do with it. And he actually thought, I mean, I don't know if you guys remember this, but he thought I called him gay.
Yep.
While I was trying to like explain what happened to me. Yeah. Like I was, yeah. He sent me off. And then obviously my teammates came to him, was like, no, like he's gay. What's going on here? And yeah, so I mean, it's all pretty surreal, but I think because the group was so together and cohesive, their decision to walk off once they knew what happened, once they knew what the coach said to Landon, it was clear that they were ready to make a stand and just support me and walk off the field.
Robbie, how much did you pay attention at the time when all this was going on?
It was kind of impossible to not pay attention to it.
Yeah.
You know, I remember hearing about it and reading about it, and it's so interesting to hear that the backstory. You know, it's interesting to hear about what happened the week before, although I did read a little bit about that. It's unfortunate that teams have to, you know, come together and discuss these kind of things, but I guess that's the world that we've been living in for a long time. And I think like enough is enough at some point in sports when you're dealing with racism, sexism, and homophobia. But just as an outsider, I, you know, with Greg, I was talking to my husband, I was just really proud of the way Colin and his team handled it. And even, you know, I'm such a big fan of Landon, even though he's such a weirdo. He was a huge support system in my life, and he's an incredible player and even a better person. So I was very proud of the way they handled it. And it's interesting to hear, you know, I feel like all teams now need to, they can't just focus on the sport. You know, they need to have this kind of internal, I don't know, like code of whatever it is. It's like this, you know, what's going to happen if this happens, or what, who are we as people and what does this team represent? So, you know, it's interesting to hear that. I think all teams need to kind of take that approach to their entire season. So.
Colin, I know you spoke about it before. If something happens like this, we're going to come together. Mm-hmm. We're going to make a stance. But were you surprised at all that when it really came down to the moment that you had to stand up, considering you're not going to make the playoffs, you're basically thrown in the towel for the rest of the season to get your point across. Were you surprised by Landon coming to your side, your teammates, the fans?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it can't be understated how much of an impact Landon had in the moment, because he was pretty adamant that he didn't want to play the game. So when your leader in the locker room is saying basically, hey, I don't want us to continue to play this game, it's a big deal. And I think my teammates heard that, and they heard what the coach had said, and they wanted to support me. I also think it's important that I am out, you know, like if I would have in that moment said that this is something that hurt me and I wasn't gay, maybe my teammates wouldn't care as much. You know, they would be like, okay, that's tough, but we all get called some things that we don't want to, be called on the field, and let's continue to play. But because they knew me and we've started to build this relationship, they weren't having that, you know, and they felt like this was a moment where they could really stick up for their teammate. Because last week, the week before, we felt like we let down our teammate Elijah because we didn't know all the information and we weren't able to support him in the moment. And I think, so he gets called the N-word, if I can remember, right around the 76th minute. And I think because he's so worked up by it, in the 82nd or something, he gets his second yellow and gets sent off. So if we maybe support him, first of all, we just support him as a teammate before anything that happens on the field. Clearly, that's more important. But maybe he doesn't get sent off, and we can just support him. So, yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe if something different happens, I punch Flemings in the face, and then I get a red card, and our season's put in jeopardy because of that. But
can I ask how much of this you guys have had to deal with over the course of your lives as soccer players? Like on the field, this is not the first time, right? Like how much over the course of your years, how did you deal with it? How much did it affect you?
You can go ahead, Robbie, if you want.
I think that's the thing that stopped me from coming out much earlier. You know, it was different before I came out to after. You know, after the only time I was called, I think it was like a queer or something, it was much more directed at me, and they knew what they were doing. When I was younger, you know, from the age of 5 till I was 23, you know, conversations or being in the locker room or being on a field and hearing faggot or this or that, it was not necessarily, you know, that people didn't know who I was. So it was much more internal. It was something that kind of chipped at me every day. You know, it's something that you kind of deal with by yourself. So it's definitely something that affected me my whole life. And even after I came out, it's like years of therapy dealing with all that stuff. But after I came out, actually, I had less of it. You know, I think people, once they're aware of who you are, and they become more sensitive to like what makes you different. And I think that's in a lot of different aspects of life.
I would wonder what you guys would say about the culture of sport on the, especially I think on the male side, because I know I was in locker rooms, you know, not being at the levels you guys have played at and thrived at, but I know I was in locker rooms. I know I was in schools. I know I was in places where that was said, and it was said quite a bit. And I could admit to saying, and I can remember the time when I realized, oh my God, look at this connection that there is. Look at the way that this hurts people. Look what this really means. And it was a moment of deep shame for me, but that doesn't erase all those moments for kids and for adults out there. Is there something, what is it about the culture of sports on the male side, or maybe our culture in general? Like, what is broken in your guys' minds?
Before I touch on that, I think going back to your last question, for me, it was really tough growing up when my best friends on my teams were using that language. Because then there was like a spark in me that I think was around high school, when I realized, oh, they don't really mean that. Like that these words are just meant to put people down, and they don't necessarily hate gay people. So that was like a big step for me to like put those two and two together. It doesn't make it easier, and it doesn't make those words being said any less hurtful. But I had to finally tell myself, oh, like just because they're saying that doesn't mean like they really, I don't know, don't like gay people. So I don't know. That was a big step for me, but yeah, I don't know. Just want to say that.
I was curious too. When you're in the locker room, is it the fear of your teammates when you kind of announce that you're coming out, or is it more the fans? Because I feel like, you know, Robbie, I've shared a locker room with you since we were 17. And, you know, I always thought that everyone loved you. You're always like, you know, the smiling, fun, you know, teammate, that no matter what, and I'm sure you realized after, had you come out back then, we all have been like, you're our guy. Like, that's not going to change anything. We're still going to ride or die with you. But was it more the fear of the fans and that perception every time you go to a venue that you're going to start hearing these slurs?
You know, I think it's different for everybody. You know, I think we should all like always remember not to kind of put someone's coming out experience. You know, it's what might be true for one person might not be true for all of us. So for me, it was definitely being in the locker room with guys that I felt like although it wasn't true, obviously, you know, you guys were very supportive after I came out. To go back to like, you know, there's years and years and years of hearing like, oh, that's gay, or there's like just little tiny things like that slowly just chip away at you, especially when you're a young kid, until, you know, a young teenager, and all the guys in your team you think are straight, and all of them behave a certain way. And so you're trying to behave that way. And so like, just for so many years of hearing these little homophobic things, even if, like Colin said, you realize after you come out, you realize your teammates actually would be supportive, that they would love you, that they're not homophobic, but it's that culture. It's just like that. It's a, there's like a, you know, the footballer stereotype that we all try to live up to. And that is not gay. That is, you know, that's, it's something else. It's very masculine. It's, you know, it's whatever Cristiano Ronaldo is. but you know, for me, Charlie, I think it was definitely the locker room and feeling like I would be so different from all of you guys and all of you guys that were my brothers. You know, I think of all the time we spent together. And I just thought, and also it was my internal homophobia growing up in a Catholic conservative family. And so there was a lot of different elements to my experience. But, you know, I've learned now that you guys would be supportive. But at the time, I was, you know, worried that I wouldn't have that same support and that I wouldn't be accepted in the locker room. And that, you know, if I told you guys and then we went in the shower, that people would, you know, be making fun of me or they just walk out of the shower. You know, there was like all those fears that play in your head that you probably, you know, in small ways, they build in your head and you kind of create a narrative and, you know, that that's maybe not totally true, but it is based off of years and years of years of hearing just so many homophobic comments, you know, nonstop in the locker room and on the field. And, you know, so my biggest fear was just you guys was that we wouldn't have the same relationship. I the fans, you know, they do whatever they can to kind of get under our skin and it's unfortunate when they say stupid things, but I didn't necessarily ever care about that kind of stuff.
I totally agree. For me, it was always my teammates, the fans, like that was the last thing I had to think about when I was coming out, publicly. And you just don't want to make anyone uncomfortable or you don't like, and you hate that even would be a case, you know, like, cause it isn't an issue, but when you're closeted, you think, oh, you don't want to make people uncomfortable. You don't want to make your teammates uncomfortable. You don't want to feel different. Cause like, all I felt in the DC locker room when I was a young kid, I thought I was just like anyone else, you know, but I knew if I came out at the time, for me, there was a barrier. I thought like I was going to make people uncomfortable. It was going to be a big deal and I wasn't ready to do it. But I will say, I don't know if you've heard this, Robbie, but, when you did come out and it was going around the locker room, hearing people say positive things about you meant the world to me. Like when they said, oh, like, and they just cared about you as a teammate and mm-hmm. Whether it was people that played with you in Columbus and they just said, you know, they talked about you as a player and as a person nothing to do with your sexuality. Like to me, that's all I needed to hear. And it gave me extreme confidence. But on the other side, when Michael Sam came out and it was on SportsCenter and my teammates said, oh, why do we have to see this? This is so stupid. Like, why does he have to come out? I was like, damn, like, what, like why do you guys care? Like, it's a big deal for him. It's a big deal for football. It's a big deal for our country. Like, why do you have such an adverse like reaction to this guy coming out and living openly, you know? So I like on one end, I'd be like, wow, they can just see Robbie as like an amazing teammate, player, person. But then they just like can't stand like a Michael Sam coming out and they think it's for attention or they think it's for whatever. And so it would just be like one good like stepping stone and then one like, you know, I don't really want to come out this today. Like that's the furthest thing away from my mind. But so
what for each of you was the moment where you said, okay, I'm going to do this? And how did you arrive at that conclusion? What made the time right? What made it for you feel, I don't know if safe is the right word. It might not be the right word.
I think Colin had a much different experience. You know, I think he was much more courageous and he was still playing when he, you know, kind of made this decision and stuck to it. I, on the other hand, I was living in England and, you know, had fulfilled a lot of different aspirations in my life when it came to football. You know, I went to Olympics with Charlie and played professionally, played for the national team, all that stuff. And I was just so depressed. I remember winning a championship with Columbus in LA and like going home to my parents' house and just sitting there and like, why am I not happy? You know, what am I like, when am I ever going to be happy? Is this success as a soccer player ever going to fulfill this like need for self-love? And I realized when I was in England that it wouldn't, and that I need to make a decision. And so I decided that I was going to come out and stop playing because again, the number of things that I'd heard growing up, in changing rooms, in the United States and Holland and England, like it really just scared the shit out of me. So I was like, I'm not going to put myself through this. So it really, for me at least, was kind of a self-realization that like nothing is going to make me happy outside of myself and that I have to kind of be in charge of that. And then it wasn't until after I had, you know, incredible support from people like Charlie and Sasha and Bruce and all these different people that I decided that actually I could go back. So I think, you know, it's very different than Colin's experience.
That's cool to hear, Robbie, and hard at the same time. But I think the one thing I really admired about you is that you did have such a good career, you know, and that does matter, you know, it shouldn't, but it does. And I think that was the one thing that was like holding me back from coming out earlier is I didn't want to come out until I was like an all-star or playing 30 games a year. And it just didn't happen. And eventually I got to the point in Minnesota where I was like, you know, that's not how I'm going to value myself as a person and as a player. And you're just not going to, you haven't played 30 games. So come out, you know, who cares about that? But I just had so much support from my teammates, from my family and from my friends. And I really didn't want to feel the regret of not coming out while I was playing. And I think it all just bubbled up to the point where I felt like it would be disingenuous and I couldn't walk around and I couldn't play like if I wasn't out and yeah. You have something to say, Charlie? Sorry.
Yeah. You know, listening to your story and seeing Robbie, you were kind of like, I'm over this. You kind of get empowered. You come back to the game, you win an MLS Cup, you beat us in the finals. And don't remind me about that. Colin, same thing for you. You come out, there's all this support. Why do you think there hasn't been more players to come out and say, man, I've seen the reception that you've got from your teammates, from the fans, from your coaches. Why do you think that stereotype is still holding people back from enjoying life and being who they are?
I can tell you from what I've heard from players is just they've not lived our experience. They don't know. You know, unless you have that actual support, you've had that like firsthand experience from your teammates, I can tell them what it's going to be like, but they still hold on to that fear that they're not going to be accepted, that, you know, the changing room will be different for them. Some of them do fear the fans a little bit, not like in a massive way, but I think it's just, it's until you've like kind of walked that walk, I don't think you quite believe it, you know, especially when you grow up your whole life thinking that what you are is, you know, that there's something wrong with you. So it's, there's a lot of different elements to this. And, obviously the changing room is a huge part of it. The culture is a huge part of it, but there's also other elements with family and just society in general. So, you know, it's hard to tell someone that like, you're going to be accepted and you're going to do this, or it's hard to persuade anyone of those kind of things. And, you know, until there's more of us than I think, you know, then they'll finally believe it.
Yeah. I think Robbie's spot on. I mean, personally, I've tried to highlight my privilege in all of this, you know, like I've been extremely lucky and privileged along this journey to be supported through all those different phases of my life. And I think like Robbie said, like, if one of those phases doesn't go right, whether it's maybe your family or your friends or an agent or someone at the club, it takes is one person to give you a really negative experience or make you feel like you shouldn't come out or make you feel like being gay is the worst thing ever. And it can deter you, you know? So, yeah, like I said, it could be an agent, could be, I mean, you look abroad and you see these clubs in Spain that like you hear these stories of how like the sponsorships in the club hierarchy just won't allow a player to come out. Like hearing that, like if I was in Spain, could I come out while I was playing for a club that just straight up would not allow a player to come out? Like, no, I wouldn't be coming out. Religiously, it was hard for me, like growing up in the church, like, so there's all these different things you have to kind of go through to be able to accept yourself or just walk away from that hate and be like, or like discrimination and be like, that's, I'm leaving that stuff aside and I'm just going to step forward. So, I mean, a lot of things have to align for you to be able to be out and I don't know, especially playing professional sports, I think still, but we're getting there.
I think that's my question about the culture is, and like locker room culture and how we eliminate that, because it is endemic. It is there. And guys are dealing with that. And I look at the other side of the game and not the other side of the game, but I mean, the women's game has so many sort of out and it's just like, there's a critical mass there. There are examples you can follow. There are people at the very top of the game in mainstream society who are writing books and on TV and being loud and saying, this is who I am. We haven't got that on the male side. Is there a way to address, to fix it? And I'm not talking about the pro level even, though maybe I am. I'm thinking more in terms of the beginnings of life. You know, you, Robbie, you talk about those early days of playing and hearing that. I remember all that. I remember what those places felt like. And they definitely did not feel safe for anybody who was sitting there thinking, I'm gay, what do I do? Like, what do you think? What do you guys think about addressing that at an earlier age? And how can we do it?
I have a question for you, Rob. Do you think there are a ton of out gay professionals or gay professionals that aren't out?
Sorry, was that for me?
Yeah. Like, do you think there are?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, there's a few. I don't know if there's a lot.
Yeah,
there's a few
different levels, right? Like of the game, it could be. Yeah, because I don't know. I feel like there is a problem.
Footballers that are closeted.
Like, yeah,
better than I was. Much better.
I think there is an issue, like at the youth level. Like I feel like the only way I can make sense of it, if you compare it to the women's game, is that like the amount of would-be gay soccer players at the highest level are just not have left the game for whatever reason, whether it's homophobia or whatever. And then there's just less of a chance that they are to make it professional. Whereas in the women's game, they feel comfortable in their teams. They feel comfortable in evolving as a person. Therefore, there's a higher chance for them to be professional. I don't know. Do you think that makes sense, Robbie? Or like,
yeah, no, I Leeds is doing something right now. I think it's smart for all these academies to have like the proper education. You know, I think it's, you know, we talk about, you know, changing the culture. First off, like, there's so much about a locker room culture that I absolutely love. You know, the banter. Yeah. It's a playground for men in so many fun ways, and you become brothers. So I'm not saying that like we should kill all that. It shouldn't be this like sterile, you know, big jokes. Like So I just want to preface it with like, there's still fun to be had and there's still all that to be had. But I think from a, you know, if we can get to young footballers and soccer players, I was just in England, obviously soccer players, and teach them about, you know, not just homophobia, but racism and sexism and just respect for people and about, you know, education and, you know, trying to make them, complete, you know, not just soccer players, but like just really working on with them and, what kind of people they are. I think that's going to make them better at their sport. It's going to help them find whatever their passion is outside of soccer when they're done. It's going to help them make better decisions while they are professional. So I think that's really important, that we have, you know, that framework in all of our clubs, you know, the Galaxy or wherever it is. And I think people are starting to do it. I know people are starting to do that in England. You know, I think that is a huge factor where we can actually improve just who our professionals are and the people that represent the U.S. national team and playing in our leagues. I think that's important.
I would add, like you said, Robbie, when Bruce came out and said, you know, I support you. Colin, mm-hmm. like you said, Landon is a leader coming out saying, hey, we're going to stand by you. I think the leaders within the clubs, whether it be the sporting director and the head coach, but also the captain, coming out every year, if this is what it takes, every single year, whether it's preseason, and saying, this is a squad, this is a locker room that is going to be acceptive of everyone and anyone, inclusive, and you know, we're never going to judge you. You're always going to be accepted. I think, like you said, you have leaders who make you feel comfortable and make you feel comfortable in your own skin of who you are and what you're about. I think that will make a difference. Obviously, there's going to be a number of other steps that have to take place. But I think from the core, when leaders come out and say, I stand by any of you for who you are, who you really are, and you're going to be accepted in this locker room, I think that's going to make a huge difference in the end.
Yeah. And as Collins had Lane as a coach, I had him as a captain. So it did make a huge difference for me with the Galaxy for such a long time. So, but there needs to be more leaders like that. And I think coaches need to pick the right captains, you know, not just a player because they're a big name, but also, you know, really to think about that decision, because I really strongly agree with Charlie that, like, you know, to have a captain like that is just going to improve a team in so many different ways. You know, it really is going to keep them together. There's always a point in the season, I think we all know, where like you have a few bad games where you've like three or four losses in a row and you're exhausted and you have to fly to Houston in like July. And if you have a captain like that, if you have a captain like that, it's just like you're always playing for each other and you bond together, because it always, then there's a point in the season where you turn it around and you have a, you know, you have your wins. And so I think it's important to have those kind of leaders in the locker room.
What could we have done as a soccer culture and as a society, honestly, better when you both made that decision, it did come out? Like, you know, the hope is that there are more Robbie Rogers and Colin Martins who will be able to make that decision. And how do we better support them? What could we have done better? It's so often with your stories, it's like the positive side, but I'm more curious about the constructive side, where we as a soccer culture and all the people that make it up can make it better.
Go ahead.
I try to focus on the positives though. I mean, I felt like when I came out, I've been extremely supported, like by the league, like by my teammates. I think when we do focus on some of the negative stuff, it can be hard for the next person. I don't know. For me, I try to, like, yes, I've acknowledged, like, growing up, the certain things that were tough. But since I've been in the league, it's been like, when I was in the league, it was pretty good. And like, because of my teammate, like if my teammates were horrible to me, and there were some teammates that were still tough, but like, if you focus on that, then the next person isn't going to come out. I don't know. And the league has tried to do their best. And I think, like, even when my friends come to the games and they see what's on the PA before the game and they see the inclusive messaging on the game, like, that stuff goes a long way. And in other leagues, that isn't happening. That type of messaging. And I'm talking about 5-6 years ago, the messaging was already there. So, I mean, we could focus on, there's still obviously a lot of stuff we can be doing, but in terms of like my message and in terms of what I try to highlight, I think I try to stay more on the positive side. But I don't know, what do you think with that question, Robbie?
It's tough. You know, I've always been a little confused, you know, when we started talking about like, why aren't there more out players? And the answer is kind of like, well, they don't really know what the sport feels like because they're so closeted and it's so internal and there's so much fear. So, you know, my experience was so positive and I had so much support from the players and the leagues and obviously coaches and my family after I came out. So I am always like every year, like, why aren't there more? Why aren't there more? But I've stopped kind of thinking about that. I've started to think more about like the younger generation. And again, that's why I think education is so important. I think I find, like, you know, everyone under 30, at least here in LA, is like, they don't identify as straight. They identify as like something else. They don't identify as gay or straight. They just like identify as whatever they want to be, which is
non-binary.
Yeah, which is, it's actually pretty cool to see young people so open with a lot of different aspects in life. So I know this is going to change. I think it's like a lot of things in the United States and around the world, it's going to be, you know, spearheaded by young people and young people that are out and playing in the academies and then just go to college and they just are who they are. So I'm definitely optimistic about that. But, you know, it's a tough question to answer because I don't necessarily know what else the MLS can be doing or the coaches or the players can be doing, because it seems like, at least from my experience and from what I've heard, is that, you know, people are very supportive and in a way that is for all to see. And, you know, of course there's going to be people on like social media or fans that are negative, but that's, you know, that's not just with homophobia. That's with a lot of different things. So, you know, I think we have to continue doing what we're doing, having these conversations, having pride nights, again, educating our youth. And it will happen. It will happen. It's just like these things, like Colin said, you like take a step forward and then step back and two steps forward and another step back. So it's just going to take some time.
You mentioned the next generation, and I noticed the same as you, that there's sort of a more of an openness and more of a, there's a mainstreamness. I don't remember those sorts of conversations growing up in Wichita, Kansas in the, you know, mid 90s. And you see those and you hear those. Do you think that there is a movement coming here where there are going to be more kids that just feel comfortable or just are who they are from an earlier age, where society is going to have to figure out how to navigate these moments sort of on the fly? Is there a critical mass coming?
Yeah, I think you're already seeing it. Yeah, I think it's incredible to see younger people like coming out at younger ages and being supported by their classmates. And I was at my high school this off season, and I was working out at the track, and I ran into one of my old teachers, and he said that our school, the homecoming king and queen, were both queer. And like, it wasn't like, okay. And 4 years ago, they jokingly, put the homecoming king as like, I think they were transgender, and that was like a joke, and it was awful. But 4 years later, the two people that are the homecoming king and queen are queer. And that's because they're just the two dopest people in the school, and like, and people just love them. And like, we're seeing like a crazy change over like in the past 5-7 years, I think, that like is incredible. But I think touching on the last point that Robbie made, I think it's really important the work that coaches and the youth side of the game is doing. And I feel like that's the biggest place that we can see improvement. And I think that like the coaches have such a big role in like making sure that like language is inclusive and on teams and making sure that just like their teams are supporting each other and that it's open to talk about these things. And that's where I think that we have seen a big improvement, and then we can continue to make an improvement so these kids can continue to come out and be supportive. And then there will be more queer kids playing and or gay kids playing, and then hopefully we'll see that at the next level.
I often, these are hard discussions to have sometimes, because I often think, okay, well, what can I do? And those are moments that I can do something, whether it be coaching my sons, whether it be being supporters to their teammates, whether it be somebody in my community that can make that difference. I also look at our society a little bit and I wonder, man, how do we, there's an elephant in the room here. You know what I mean? There's like a political side of this as well that trickles down into sports, whether it be like the trans legislation we've seen and banning. Colin, I know you're sort of a history buff. When you, not just a buff, you know, educated, when you look at this time period and you think about the way that our society sees and treats LGBTQ people, and what stands out to you? How do you think we'll be remembered? What are our steps forward?
Ooh, well, I think we've seen a presidency in the past 4 years that was trying to eliminate a lot of the progress that we've made. And then I think in the short time of our new presidency, we're seeing some reversal of that. But with that said, we're still seeing all this anti-trans legislation that's happening in this year. So it's really hard to, it's hard to dissect it all. But I know that the there's a lot of people that are on the right side trying to right those wrongs. And this anti-trans legislation to me is awful. I don't understand it. I don't understand where the root of it comes. It's almost like because of the new presidency that the people in these states are trying to take back more control and I don't know, try to make life harder for LGBTQ people when they can. I don't get it. But I don't know. That's a really hard question. That's a hard question. But
I pitch you guys with some of those.
No, right. I mean,
they're big. That are big, and that's, I guess, what we're grappling with, right?
They're big. I mean, it's hard. It's hard when you bring in the historical aspect, like trying to analyze like trends in terms of like when certain progressive policies are being put out there, and then when there's bills and policies like these anti-trans ones that are being put out there, with a president like Biden in control. So it's hard to say why these things happen. But I don't know, Robbie, do you want to step in here? Help me out.
No, I think you're, you know, stating the facts. I find sports to be like such an interesting like microcosm of the world of the United States. You know, it was like Colin Kaepernick was like taking a knee to, you know, protest police brutality, and you know, then you have different athletes coming out, and you know, I came out, and or at least was playing in 2013 when it was like the marriage equality stuff, you know, during the Obama presidency. So it's so fascinating to kind of see how those two shadow each other. So I think, you know, the United States would just like, we kind of just like slowly, it feels like slowly move in the right direction. And of course we have scars from the past, whether it's racism, again, sexism, homophobia, but I do feel like we're trending in the right direction. I think people are more aware of the wounds that people carry outside of sports and in sports and trying to make changes. You know, you also see that with the women's sports and equal pay and different aspects. So again, I think that we're all moving in the right direction. Unfortunately, it's slow, and there's, you know, steps that we take backwards when it's someone like, you know, Trump or these anti-trans bills. But overall, I think that the United States and sports here specifically is heading in the right direction. So I'm still optimistic. I'm still optimistic about the youth and hearing from them. You know, one of the greatest things I think about like coming out and playing was definitely hearing from all the young high school athletes, college athletes, younger than that, that were just like out and doing their thing, and they weren't as affected as I was by being a closet athlete, and they kind of live openly. So, you know, again, as I said, like it's kind of our youth that will lead us there. I think that's in sports, but also, you know, as we talk about politics in our country, you know, it seems like it's all kind of just slowly moving forward. Even when we have a step back, it feels like people kind of pick each other up and then make changes.
I'll end it with you guys here, and we've been going for a while. And just you've talked about the youth and people reaching out to you. I'm curious what you would say to listeners of this show, because we have a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds, whether it be age, whether it be gender, whatever it is, that listen to this. What would you tell kids that are maybe in the same situation that you were, who are wondering what they should do, how they should deal? Do you have advice? Is there something that you tell people? What would you say to them?
Personally, I try to tell people to, pick one or two people that love you and that care about you. And when you're ready personally, open up to them and give them the chance to like, to receive you for how you are. And, hopefully in most cases they will. And if not, then, just know that that's not a reflection of the person you are. But most cases, and I can only speak for myself, that when you open up to the people that love you, they'll give you that love back. And then hopefully slowly you can try to expand that and feel acceptance in other places.
Yeah. My advice is somewhat similar. Except the only, I guess the difference that I would have done when I was younger is probably find someone away from, sports, probably away from my family that I could have, whether it was like a therapist or, you know, someone like someone at the Trevor Project or at Glisten or somewhere, to just kind of be able to put some words to all these things I was feeling, and that would help me, that could possibly help like guide me through these conversations I was about to have. I just think that could be important, because a person like that or people like that, just to be able to like get those things, those words and those feelings outside of you and not just hold them all in, I think it's just a very healthy first step to, whether you're coming out to your family or your teammates or whatever, you know, it's just good to kind of have a person to be able to, have this, it's not just an internal dialogue, right? You're expressing yourself and you're getting feedback from someone and they're helping you kind of make a plan of like, okay, how am I going to come out to all these people? I wish I would have done that. So that's like the only advice, I think. I'm not one to give advice usually, but that's the one advice.
No, that's great advice, Robbie.
I think it's been great to hear from both of you. I know we've hit some, we've hit a lot and you've shared a lot. And I really thank both of you for that, for being here and for being honest with us and everybody listening. Thank you. I would just say.
Thank you, boys.
Thanks, Charlie.
So that's an important conversation, Charlie, a heavy conversation, one that I think was really illuminating for me in so many ways. And not that I didn't already know that my behavior, the things that I did, the things that I said as a kid, as a youth, as a teenager, as a young adult, I knew that they mattered. But in some ways, I didn't truly understand the impact that they had on people who were looking for support in that moment. And that goes for whether you're thinking about coming out, whether you're a member of the LGBTQ plus community or otherwise. I think we all have a message to take away from that, which is to be supportive, to be welcoming, to
educate.
Yeah, to be introspective about what the things that we say and do are saying to other people and how that may hurt them, how that may hold them back from being their true selves. So I really thank Colin and Robbie for coming on here to chat with us. And I hope that everyone out there listening learned something, got something out of that they can apply to their own lives and have a moment to think and educate themselves, as you say, Charlie. All right, let's get to the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com. What do we got here? Should I pour a shot of Malort? Should I
sounds
get that
like
going
you're,
here?
It sounds like you're not going to have to. I think
your bet was
if they made the play when they made the playoffs.
Yeah,
I think you were confident about it, and it was sort of like a celebration, yeah, not like a punishment.
Gotcha.
Which I had like a shot of Malort last week. Not that bad, so maybe it's not that bad. It sounds like you won't have to, is basically all the emails that we got from people.
It doesn't sound like it. It looks like the eye test with the Chicago Fire would tell you that I don't think I'm going to have to take any celebratory shots of Malort.
We then proceeded to just have a mailbag full of people are unhappy with the job performances of people who run many of the teams in Major League Soccer.
At the bottom of the table.
So yeah, the Malort emails moved into Rafael Vicky emails. And let me just give you this general question out of 18 emails we got, which is who is on the most pressure as a coach in Major League Soccer right now?
Most pressure. I would say, Charlie, that if you're looking at the pressure rankings right now, mm-hmm, you've got to have, I think, what is it, four names that are pretty squarely in those pressure rankings?
I would go probably six.
Oh, okay. I'll name my four.
Charlie's and then you can tell me who I'm missing. Whole league in.
Yeah, yeah, I'll tell you. Okay. So
Bruce Arena, number one.
Yeah. Under pressure to get him to the shield. You got Luchi Gonzalez right now, Dallas in 13th. It is not going well for them. They're not winning at home. They're certainly losing on the road. You have Mark Dos Santos in Vancouver. It's just sort of been a continuation for them. They're definitely under pressure. He's definitely under pressure.
But coaching.
That's a good point. It's a very fair and good point. Rafa Wicki's in this group. Absolutely. They have the worst points per game by far in the league right now. 0.44 per game, 4 points from 9 games, a negative 10 goal differential. That is tough. And then Chris Armas is my fourth. Who would be the other two for you? You said six.
Charlie?
Yap Stam.
Okay.
Is that not fair?
No, I think it's fair. Would you? So let me try,
Charlie,
to guess the
last by the
one.
Way, just in case you were wondering, I know you have like five jobs, but if you needed six, we got an email talking about if, let's say, something were to happen with Yap Stam, that they would like you to take over as coach. I think Weeby is taking over the business side. I am taking over the sporting side.
Nice.
We're just going to revamp the whole thing.
I promise you, we would flip the script.
You guys got the hard job. I'm feeling pretty good about that business side. I got the new stadium. The city just wants a winning team. Like, if you guys can do your jobs, we're gonna be fine. But if you don't do your jobs, might be trouble.
Yeah. Well,
for this extra time Cincinnati version.
It's a package. So if I go, we all go.
Actually, Weeby, you're the minister of culture.
Oh,
I think you're getting the Matthew McConaughey. Cool.
I need a orange leisure suit and a djembe or a bongo or whatever it is that he's playing on the field. Who's the sixth though? Is it what, Phil Neville?
Matias Almeida.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so, man. I think they got too much invested in Matias. The whole squad is his boy.
This is the pressure list. And then this is the mount he makes. And every time that goes up, the pressure list goes down. Yeah,
exactly.
Internal pressure from him. He expects results, but I think that's a club that's married to him as long as he's ready to be.
If you're a San Jose supporter, that's trash. you don't want that.
Charlie came into that so smooth.
Hypothetically,
if you were a San Jose supporter.
If you are, like, you want to be winning. You want to be winning trophies. You don't want to just be like, we'll win a game here 3-0. We'll lose a game 6-0. That's fine. We're fine with that.
And on that note, that's it from us. Any thoughts? You know how to get us, 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. The soccer starts on Friday, Inter Miami, Orlando on FS1, goes all the way through Sunday. The big national TV game on Sunday is Austin FC against the Columbus Crew, also on FS1, with Sporting KC LFC on ESPN and a couple of games on Unimas, Tudien, and on Twitter in English. That's it from us. We'll see you on Monday, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. We'll be right back.